Hi, Lenny. Welcome.
Hi, Linda. So nice to see you again.
Yes, with a little bit of time zone difference, but it works, huh? So with me today is Lenny Kessler. We met when we were doing our executive MBA with Brown and IE Business School more than 10 years ago. Lenny is an investor turned impact entrepreneur. He co-leads a new luxury luggage brand. He's currently focused on fundraising to scale their mission, applying circular economy principles to the luggage industry. He also advises corporates and investment industry on sustainability, helping organizations with transition. He has also started his own podcast. I can't wait to hear more about that. So great to have you here, Lenny.
Thank you. Very happy to be there, Linda.
So since you woke up this morning, did you manage to take a pause? Was the pause intentional?
This morning was a bit harder, but I do plan to take a pause after our recording.
So my recording made your routine a bit different today, huh? Lenny, I know you as someone who is a global citizen. You've moved to different cities, different countries, and you know you always come with a very global perspective. What was the hardest pause you have ever made?
So the hardest was not the pause that I decided. In 2002, I came back from Japan, and because the financial crisis was on the forced pause for several months. And this one was the hardest pause because I just did not want to be in pause. Then I took, later on, pauses that were conscious pauses, where they were maybe bigger in terms of impact on my life, but way easier.
It was the 2002, right? Financial crisis. What happened? How did you feel?
I came back. I was working in the fund management industry as I was still very junior. And I came back more for love reasons than work reasons. And here I met a couple headhunters and said, I need to find a job. And they all told me basically, if you want to stay in the fund management industry, just wait until the market's rise again. So it was quite a long pause. After a few months of turning around, I decided to become a photographer for a couple of years and just came back to the fund management industry later on. But these few months of waiting and not really knowing what to do, because I was pretty set up on staying in the fund management industry. So this was, I think, the big difference with the pauses I took later on when I decided larger shifts in my career, where basically I knew I wanted to change. So there were pauses that were useful. You did some work on either research or work on oneself. Personally, I worked a lot on myself on each pause and tried to adapt to my worldview. So, yeah.
Wow. I'm most curious about the photography years.
In early 2003, I met an Indian friend who was importing textiles to Europe. And he offered to guide me through all his suppliers in India. Since I loved photography since I was a kid, my father was a photographer, amateur, but intense amateur. And I used to work in the dark room with him and all this. So I decided that was an opportunity to, see something else and get out of my dark period. So I just, grab a camera, went to India with absolutely no clear plans in mind. And this was great. Then I decided it was also a way to make a living and occupy myself. So I became a photographer, mainly doing portraits, a bit of fashion, a lot of theater and live events. And then the markets had come back up, so I could move back into finance more easily. And also, we were starting to think of having kids and all this. And I decided that working basically every evening and every weekend was not a great family play. So I decided to come back to finance.
Was that an intentional one?
Yes, coming back to finance was very intentional. Both family commitments. Also, the photography was becoming less fun because all this had been digitalized in the meantime. So I thought, you know, if I spend my day behind a computer, it can be a Bloomberg rather than Photoshop. And also, we were asked to produce more and more pictures, and I wasn't extremely happy with the quality because I like to go after quality. And yeah, one of the last assignments I had, we had to produce like 24 visuals for two different magazines, Vogue and another one. I don't remember which one was the other one. In one day in the studio. And, you know, you had to pretend it was 24 different places and all this. And I thought this was crazy. This was just moving furniture around and taking a picture without really knowing what you were doing. So I thought it was a good time to move back to finance. And make photography a hobby again. You know, it's much more enjoyable as a hobby.
I didn't know you were a photographer for Vogue.
I wasn't the star photographer. I just took a few pictures.
Nice. We need to see that, Lenny. I hope you still have the photos that you should share that with us. More and more impressive, Lenny. So tell me more about, I guess, the goals. When you were going back to finance, and apart from family commitments, I guess you stayed on obviously for a couple of years. Did anything change when you went back to finance a second time?
Not really, because I had the same motivation, which I was extremely curious about the world at the time. Well, I still am, but. And I wanted to know a lot more about Asia, so I became a fund manager covering Asia, which gave me the opportunity to travel a lot, meet a lot of people, understand different cultures. Well, I'm not sure we'd ever understand, but at least get, you know, confronted with different cultures, different worldviews, do things that I thought were useful because we were financing a lot of stuff in emerging markets. So I really enjoyed that. We opened an office in India and I had a whole team in Mumbai. So these were really beautiful years. But at some point, my sustainability mind started to be a bit frustrated with spending so much time in the plane because I was race conscious about climate problems. And even though nobody really cared, it was like 10, 15 years ago, it was becoming harder and harder for me to think, okay, I have this huge CO2 impact. All right, I'm financing schools and other things, but maybe someone else can do it, you know, locally. And maybe there are problems in France or Europe that I could try to tackle. So yeah, I did this and then... the company I was working for was bought out, so I decided to sell my shares and leave. And that's when we met. That's when I took a big voluntary pause with IE Brown and started the company at the same time. So the first one I started during IE Brown crashed miserably because we just didn't have time. As you remember, it was quite intense.
Yeah.
The second one worked out in the medtech. And there I was really happy because I was feeling we were having a direct impact. You know, finance is pretty far away from reality, you know, always disconnected because you have so many intermediaries. So this first experience in medtech was great, but I realized I wasn't a doctor. So I tried to go back to finance and mix both and started a company doing integrated reporting for financial and extra-financial stuff. The theory of change, to take an impact word, was that if we gave customers from private banks information on, you know, their environmental impact and social impact. Maybe they could start changing their dinner discussion from, I made 5.5% last year to, well, I created 200 jobs last year. Mm. And if we had this kind of discussions, maybe the world would change a bit faster. So this adventure failed also because we started in, well, we came to market in January 2020 and COVID kicked us out two months later. Our first two customers said, okay, thank you. We pause here. So now I'm doing consulting on the exact same themes. Mm-hmm. And added, as you know, a few years ago, met another IE alumni passionate about luggage. And so we're starting, we started almost 3 years ago now, doing all the conception, but we're coming to market right now and raising the funds right now for production for a circular economy play on luggage.
Fascinating, Lenny. You described a couple of startups. Yeah, I know. You describe a few startups, and before we get into the specifics of the different business that you got into and leverage your curiosity on, tell me more about, I guess, the mindset shift from corporate to entrepreneurship. That's one aspect I'm very curious about. Like, what made you decide that is it enough is enough, or oh, this is really something that I really want to pursue? Like, or is there a happy in between?
Yeah, it's not so much corporate to entrepreneurship because I was in a very small company and I was a partner. So I was a small minority holder, but I still felt at home. It was more, at some point I really decided, okay, or realized, no, I have only one life. What do I want? Is it just to accumulate more money? Maybe, but I didn't find so much satisfaction there. Obviously, I need money and I get paid when I work. but I wanted to have a larger impact and try to, you know, participate at whatever I can to give a sustainable place to live for our kids, basically.
Love that.
So this is really what motivated me to, you know, go and experience entrepreneurship. I do believe, and actually I'm writing a letter that should come out very soon on that, that entrepreneurship is the main lever for change. No, I will not be very politically correct, but I don't think our governments pretty much anywhere in the world are going to tackle the problem seriously. Consumers, it's very hard to tell people you should consume better, but, you know, go on a diet and put a fast food on each corner of the street. It doesn't work. We're biological animals. And, you know, you see the advertisement for all these fast foods, you just go and eat them. So this leaves us with businesses, basically. The large ones, it's extremely hard for them to change. They're in their legacy systems, legacy, whatever. A few do, a few change, and a few are going ahead, but not that many. So I think solace can only come from entrepreneurs doing something new. Either they succeed and it's great, or they fail and they will have at least, you know, forced the incumbents to move a little bit. So that's basically my view of how work has to move.
Be the change you want to see, right?
Exactly. You know, that's the
Lenny, you are that. I mean, all that you say was, I mean, it must be hard, no? Like, trying to change things and status quo, it's not easy. What is your mindset getting into it? And what were some of the things that you've accumulated from the different experiences that you have had managing different work in emerging markets, for example? You know, also, you know, having the exposure to more of a global view rather than, you know, somewhere local. How did all these experiences and lessons got you to where you are now?
I was a bit naive, to be honest. So all the investment is a lot of fun. Meeting people all over the place was a lot of fun and very interesting, and I learned a lot. Moving into impact and sustainability was way harder. And I, like many people who work in this field, have gone through serious depressions at times. Because you start thinking, okay, I'll do something, and then you realize that it's just too big and you have the whole world against you. So then there's this depression phase. And then, you know, either you abandon, a lot of people abandon and just go back to normal work because, you know, you do make a little bit less money to work a little harder for something that basically you never see the result of. Or you decide, okay, it doesn't matter. I'll just focus on the process and grind it, you know, day by day and be happy with whatever I find and with meeting people, having a coffee, you know, having fun with the kids, whatever, and not focus too much on the result of your work because that's really hard. And this maybe will link to your topic is you need a lot of pauses.
Before we get there, what is the sentiment out there on the work that you do in sustainability? Like, what is your sensing on the market? ESG was such a big topic for the last few years and then it went down. But what are people talking about now? Like your investor community, the consumers potentially that you are speaking to?
ESG was seen by many. You have a few exceptions and hopefully we will have more exceptions. But for the majority of the market, ESG was just, it was a fad. You know, they said, okay, it's coming, it will leave, it's... Now we have AI, and before we had Bitcoin or blockchain. And it's a bit hard when you work in sustainability because you know it's not a fad. Actually, all the scientific research and facts show that we're having a real problem. And each season where you have a new catastrophe somewhere, larger wildfire somewhere, or whatever, you think, okay, maybe this time. Politicians and the system will understand, but you don't change a system just with one event. A system is way more complex. So basically, it was a fad. Now it's gone, helped by Trump. But I would not say Trump is the only responsible. No, it was an excuse for a lot of people to just stop working on it. What is reassuring is that we see that the companies that have done the work of what we call double maturity analysis, it means really understanding their impact and how they are impacted by the world. These people are moving ahead because now they understand it's really survival for their own companies. A lot of family businesses are moving ahead because they want to give the business to their kids. So you have a lot of people moving ahead, but the majority and the big guys, you know, the main oil companies, or not only the oil, it's a bit easy, are really slowing things down. When there are things to be done, I mean, the agricultural space is, I think, one where we can, it's as much a solution as it is a problem. We can take back CO2 in our soils if we take care of the soil. There's a lot to do and there's a lot of hope there. But we need, again, it's a whole system. So you need pressure on every part of the system for the system to change.
I'm sure we can go on for days talking about this.
Yes, and this we're going out of your topic. But
yes. But thank you for sharing. So getting into the different businesses, what were some of the, like if you were to tell someone who's going to get into entrepreneurship or starting their own business, what is maybe one or two things that you've learned?
Well, there's one thing. There's one thing because I advised a few entrepreneurs over the years also, and I did the mistake myself. We usually think our idea is great, and we go too fast. We run. So I'll be a bit counter intuitive here, But in my experience, the businesses that succeed are not the businesses that think they will build something in 3 years, but those that think they will build something in 10 years. Mm. It's a marathon. You don't want to crash because you're running too fast. But also the market is not necessarily waiting for you, you know, so you need to convince and you need time and you need to, I mean, despite what we learn in A. Brown entrepreneurship courses, you don't test a market in two questionnaires. It takes a bit of time, you know, to really understand your market. You can, okay, test and have a hunch that there's something, but to really understand what your customers want and how they buy and what motivates them. And maybe, you know, is sustainability the reason for buying or is it just a reassuring point? Then you need some real reason for buying, et cetera, et cetera. So this takes time. I think we often focus too much on revenue growth and not enough on resilience. So today when I see someone start, I always say, start by building your ecosystem. The more partners you have, the more people want you to survive, and the more resilient you become. And that's really an idea that comes from biology. You know, any animal, cell, plant, whatever, they're connected to a lot of other creatures around them. And I think that's something that we often forget. You know, you come here, oh, I have a great idea, everybody will love it. I make my widget and nobody wants it, and then I crash.
Yeah. I'm trying to start this podcast and my little company. Longer term, I hope it'll be something a bit more than the podcast. So yeah, I'm getting the advice that I needed. But, you know, again, you're a fund manager, then you became partner, and then you start your own business. How has the definition of success changed over time? Is success even important to you?
Yes, success is very important. But the definition of success has evolved a lot. You know, it went from basically what we're fed by society, you know, success is making a lot of money, to realizing it didn't move me that much. Very conscious of the Maslow pyramid, you know, you need the first couple steps and be safe and have a house and food. But once you have this, it's not the money that will make you happy. It's serving something a bit larger than yourself, you know, and being part of a group. So for me, it was through, you know, helping the environment and sustainability. More and more, I'm going into how do you create communities? Because I actually think it's also, you know, one of the levers. It's not just the environment. The environment will survive without human beings, so that's not really the problem. But if we want to change the way we do things, and if we want to do them well, I think communities are a real source of opportunity. Now I'm really interested in communities because they're a source of happiness. When I hear the statistics that about half of the Americans suffer from loneliness, and I suspect Europe is the same, probably not all part of Asia, but some of them will have similar situations. You think, okay, all these developed countries, people are lonely and unhappy. Maybe since we're supposed to consume a bit less of the earth resource, maybe if we take some of our happiness from community, from seeing people, from sharing, you know, drinks or whatever, you're not advocating for degrowth, you're just advocating for happiness. And you'll still have the growth because you have things. And I'm very optimistic about human creativity. So I'm not really worried for the economy. I'm worried for the people. And the people, I think today, really need a sense of community and a sense of, you know, seeing your family, seeing your friends. This is what we lack a lot. Not everywhere. It's very cultural also. But I know in the US, because people move around, the families are usually scattered. in Paris specifically, people work very late, so it's very hard to see your friends after work, which wasn't the case in other cities. And I think this is really important. We have to find ways, whatever the way, to recreate these communities, and not only for the people for whom it's easy, but we have to go and, you know, give a hand for those where it's harder.
Wow. Sounds like your definition of success has transcended like the Maslow hierarchy of needs, huh? It's almost at the very top, huh? Which is finding a purpose that's serving many others other than yourself, huh? Very admirable. And what do you fight for now? Is it what you just talked about? Is it the community that you hope to serve and to build?
Well, there's several levels. The immediate fight is to get our suitcase on the market. You know, something very simple.
Yeah.
But this is always, it's not the end. It's just a means. You get this, you show people that you can actually have a circular economy, because now what's crazy is circular economy is actually decreasing. Now we were slightly above 10% of the world economy was circular. We're now below 10%. Because the rest of the economy is growing faster than the circular economy. But we do have problems with resources that will hit very hard, because, you know, our economy is only measuring the flux, not the stock. So you're emptying your bucket of water and you see water pouring. You say, oh, great, it will always pour. But no, at some point the bucket is empty. And then it's a bit too late to say, okay, how do I do it? So the suitcase, okay, we're in a luxury market. We chose our niche where we can be profitable while making something that's way more expensive, because it's a bit more complex to make something recyclable and repairable, etc. But this, you prove it's possible and you try, you know, if more people do it in different areas, you know, we're doing a suitcase, someone will do whatever, a car maybe tomorrow or something else, I don't know. And then we prove it's feasible. And then the market starts changing. And as I was explaining earlier, I'm thinking more and more about communities. So I'm starting to think of a next project that will probably try to build something around that. But it's a bit early to talk about it. I'm just starting with the podcast for now.
That's a great way to build community, by the way, having a podcast.
Exactly.
What anchors you? I know you're a big fan of pauses, shifting gear a bit. Like, what anchors you now?
Pauses are a really, really important part of my life today, or my organization. The way I try to live my life. It started really when I was a fund manager, you know, running all the time. And then, because when you manage a fund, your performance is published pretty much every day or every week. So you have a very quick feedback on what you're doing. And I started doing a lot of statistics on my decisions and realized that a decision that was taken in the morning, so after the pause, was usually better than the decision I took in the afternoon. So I started adapting, you know, my time and when I would do the study, when I would do the calculations, when I would do, etc. And there, realizing that sometimes taking a couple hours off really helped me solve a problem. I mean, all this should be very easy, but it's not what I was raised in. You know, I was raised in just work and deliver and work and deliver. And it took
me
a long time.
Many of us.
Yeah. And it took me a long time to realize, you know what, you take 2 hours off and things are easier. And now I try to take at least half a day every week off just to, you know, think on the main problem of the moment. I know some people think it's incredible that you can take half a day off. I actually think it should be, you know, 3 half days off a week. because the real work is there. The real work is not when you're on your Zoom call doing whatever or preparing a report. It's thinking and finding the solutions to your problems. And this, no, for lack of a better word, it's only when you're in monk mode that you do it. Start, you think, and... But then I also am applying it to, so this is for work, but I'm applying it also for myself. So I try to take a day off every month. So these, I just knock days off my calendar in the beginning of the year. And it's very, very hard for me to move one. You know, the excuse has to be really good. It's just these days I don't exist for the world. I wake up in the morning and will decide in the morning what I do. The whole idea is that it's not something in the schedule. It's something that suddenly my brain will just stop. And I'll go in a cafe, write, read, have a massage, whatever. And then I'm more respectful of my holidays also because, you know, as a fan manager, there's never one country that's not open when the others are closed. So for years, I basically worked every holiday. For me, holiday was basically working part-time, working in the morning and enjoying in the afternoon. So now I'm a lot more conscious of, okay, there is a real need to take a longer pause once in a while.
I love that. I almost feel like I need a little chart to map out Lenny's schedule so that we can all learn about it. Maybe we print screen your
calendar.
I'm
afraid to write this because then people will say, oh, why don't you do this? You have your half a day in the week. And I might get even more demands. But
but I think it's the power of creating intentional boundaries.
It's both intentional boundaries and... starting to know yourself, that's the advantage of white hair. You know, you have a bit more life experience. I mean, some people are like diesels. They can go for days and days and days. I have very close people to me. They're not particularly fast, but they just never stop. So I'm the opposite. I go very fast, but then I need a real pause. And for years, I would just go fast and then slow because I was tired and start to grind in and suffer. And it's stupid. You just need to respect your own rhythm. If you can go fast and then you need a pause and then you go fast. And you just do as much.
You mentioned you're like the F1 car.
Exactly.
You go very fast and then you need a pause. Huh?
Then I have to go for repair.
Massive repair after each race. What does your next decade look like? I know you're going to build a community of sort. What else?
I think we'll do
does
things.
Does it look like?
I really... So I thank you for asking the question on the decade because I see projects as a 10-year. Now we're in the middle of the suitcase, so I still have a bit of time on the suitcase. But then what I'm more and more looking at are... agriculture and communities. So I think if I can find a way in the next 10 years to first reconnect myself a bit more to nature, which I've been trying in the last few years, but there's more to do. But also try to reconnect people around. I really think we lack nature understanding of the soil, understanding of plants. We're all for plenty of reasons, because we live in cities, because we're animals, so biologically we're made to recognize animals more than plants. But there's a lot to learn in going back to nature, and there's a lot of solutions for our world problems that are actually right there. They're not technological, they're really taking care of our soil, planting trees, understanding what you plant where and why, because it will not be one global solution. And I think that's really important. So I want
Amazing.
To dedicate the next 10 years on that. Then
we'll
see how much health I have left in 10 years. for the next 10 years.
I foresee like a little move to maybe outside of a city, maybe for a startup, right? Or maybe, well, the solutions could be in the city, I don't know.
Maybe. No, no, you know me and I love, I'm a really city person, but I think I'll force myself to spend a few days every couple of weeks in the countryside way more often.
Mm.
Yeah.
Lovely. I can imagine that already. So final question. So this podcast is about stories like yours. Obviously, everyone has a different one. Who should I talk to next?
Ooh, the hard
question. Any suggestions?
I should have prepared. Well, I'll take the easy answer. We had a whole cohort at the IE Brown, a whole cohort of brownies with a lot of interesting stories. And so this will be the 2-minute advertisement for IE Brown. But the diversity in the group was so extraordinary that, you know, I think you can interview the whole cohort. Yeah, we all had the 1.5 year pause, traveling all over the place. I'm not sure it was a pause, to be honest, since we work like mad, but break in our usual rhythm.
I remember having 3 shifts, the work shift, the IE Brown shift, and then sleep, you know. That was the life. But fascinating. Yes, I agree. I mean, all of us. I mean, look at us. We're all so different. Different industry, different nationality, different background. Yeah. I mean, just fundamentally so diverse, right? So, yeah. I mean, definitely.
It's just to illustrate, maybe you had the same experience. I don't know. But on the first assignment we had, I came thinking, you know, I was an investor. I invested in 700 or 800 companies. Like, okay, I know this case. I broke it, blah, blah, blah. And I arrived with my solution thinking, you know, that's an easy one. And we were a group of 5 and the other 4 all have a different solution. And so, you know, your first reflex is saying, no, my solution is good. But then you start thinking and listening and say, actually, each one of these 4 solutions looks good. But they're all different. So, and this is just a result of different backgrounds, different stories, different, you know, cultures. And that's where I think your podcast is really going to, you know, can bring something. It's enriching.
Yeah, I hope so. Thank you, Lenny. This has been wonderful. Any final words around pauses, like any advice for people who may want to get into, like you, being so intentional about having pauses, like what is the first thing that they should focus on, you know?
Well, as soon as you are a bit lost, you don't know where to do, how to choose or whatever, take a pause. I think we grow up, many of us, in a culture where we think pause is wasting time. The Dalai Lama meditates 4 hours a day, you know, and look at everything he does. So we can take a 10-minute pause. It's fine.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lenny.